How intense has your behavior made your life? Maybe it's your intense life that's made your behavior so intense. Today we're going to talk about intensity and how it affects different parts of you in this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. Hello, this is Recovery Support and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Some today find themselves seeking rest or an escape from hectic schedules, and then they find that they've engaged in watching a high-intensity car chase movie, or they go to a paintball shooting, or some other kind of activity that gets the adrenaline pumping all the harder. There are reasons for this, and we'll read what Dr. Mark Chamberlain has to say about it. First, we're going to read from the essay white book, The Problem, on page 203. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it. We gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. Please connect with me and make me whole, we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real, lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples. We took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. Conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us, we were really losing our lives. Today I'd like to share with you a portion of Dr. Mark Chamberlain's book, Wanting More, The Challenge of Enjoyment in the Age of Addiction. Now, I find that Dr. Chamberlain's title is a huge lesson right in itself. Listen again to that title. Think about what it says to you. Wanting More, The Challenge of Enjoyment in the Age of Addiction. Things just aren't enough anymore, are they? Have you noticed that we don't talk much about contentment anymore? It's not even a goal for most people these days. Well, let's jump right in on page 22 of Dr. Mark Chamberlain's book, Wanting More, The Intensity Trap. A Japanese proverb says, "He who knows not when he has enough is poor." Imagine that a friend has come seeking your help, complaining that she no longer enjoys life. The well of passion has run dry for her. She is bored and dissatisfied and would like your suggestions for breaking out of this monotonous, dull existence. What advice would you give her? What is the solution to the emptiness she is experiencing? How can she overcome her lack of enjoyment? One day I gave a class full of students in a graduate business class the above scenario. Here are the suggestions they offered. Start a new hobby. Take an exotic getaway. Buy a new CD. Do something to spice up your love life. Try out bungee jumping, rock climbing, hang gliding, or some other high adrenaline sport. Go shopping. Go dancing. These suggestions, like most I hear when I ask for input on this kind of problem, entail some kind of increase in stimulation. Since what we already have is not doing it for us, we try to throw another log on the fire to turn up the heat. We do this because we believe appetites promise that having more will do more for us. However, when we pursue it rapidly, satisfaction is rarely ours for long. It seems to slip away quickly and remain just out of reach. No matter how far we jack up the intensity, our appetite simply rises to just above whatever new level we have reached. Because of this, stimulation must be constantly increased to match our voracious appetites. This is the nature of the intensity trap, and it can escalate into what I've labeled the cycle of addiction. Even as we pursue and seek it, satisfaction eludes us because our needs expand at an even quicker rate. Appetite is forever exceeding stimulation's expansion because enjoyment's physical and spiritual machinery are damaged once they are bombarded and overloaded. The body's natural pleasure chemicals make everyday life interesting and enjoyable. However, this exquisite system is also a delicate one. It provides us the capacity to enjoy life, but its existence by no means guarantees that it will forever operate optimally. In fact, our enjoyment system operates on a use-it-wisely-or-lose-it basis, just as so many of our other capacities do. People who flood their pleasure systems with intense stimulation essentially overload the circuits, spoiling to some extent their future capacity to enjoy the more natural doses that result from what once were enjoyable activities. We pay a long-term, sometimes permanent price for immediate rewards that are artificially or improperly induced. Substances and behaviors become addictive precisely to the extent that they trigger or mimic the body's own chemicals and activate our natural reward system. It is an emotional jolt and can be a thrill to take our bodies, which are finely tuned to respond to the nuances and subtleties of the most minute stimulation, and subject them to stimulation that overwhelms. Our auditory system, which can bring us sublime enjoyment in response to a simple chord progression strummed out on a guitar, can also make our hearts race and adrenaline flow in reaction to the jolts and screeches of music that assaults. The same sexual responsiveness, sensitive enough that we can appreciate a soft touch or the mere sight of our spouse, can also be overloaded by the sight of sculpted bodies in provocative poses. The same neural circuits that provide twinges of empathy when we witness a child scraping her knee will also provide a chest-pounding, gut-wrenching, sweaty-palmed thrill if we subject ourselves to filmed scenes of violent horror or action. All of these overpowering methods will work to provide the bodily responses associated with emotion. You can use a Stradivarius as a tennis racket, too, but the fact that it will do the job temporarily doesn't make that a good idea. A fine violin might return a lob or two and perhaps even survive a backhand smash, but the overall effect in terms of its intended purpose would be to ruin an instrument that might have otherwise lasted lifetimes. Similarly, the payoff gained through deliberate emotional overloading evaporates almost immediately into thin air. In a healthy courtship, for instance, the subtle stimulation of affectionate touch is pleasurable and inviting. A desire for increasing intimacy, when pursued intelligently and with restraint, can draw a couple to ever-deepening levels of commitment and enjoyment of each other's company. But the same vehicle that, if not abused, can eventually transport the couple to an entire world of wondrous destinations can also be hijacked and exploited for joyriding. Once it's been used for thrill-seeking, however, transforming it back so that it fits for its original purpose is not nearly as quick or simple a process. One of the reasons we develop a tolerance for stimulation and become desensitized is that the body doesn't ignore the state of excess we create when we indulge. Like a thermostat that turns off the furnace when the house is warm enough, feedback mechanisms in the body shut down production of these internal pleasure messengers as the system is flooded. After we subject ourselves to an artificially intense degree of stimulation, we become increasingly insensitive to such stimulation and the intensity must be increased even more to have the same effect. Eventually, forget about ecstasy. The addicted individual can't even feel normal without the excessive behavior or the drug. This is the paradoxical nature of the cycle of addiction. We add more and more stimulation only to find that it does less and less for us. Sebastian Younger described the thrill of leaving the safety of American society to work as a journalist in Croatia during the height of the Balkan conflict. After spending time on the battlefront near Sarajevo, he headed south to a town called Split. What surprised me, given what a coward I thought I had been about the dangers in Sarajevo, was how dull life suddenly seemed without them. In Split, we were able to cross the road without a second thought, to sit at a cafe and order a wonderful meal, and suddenly everything felt drab and dead. Nothing was exciting. Nothing was worth doing. All I wanted was to go back to that strange city where everything I did seemed big and important and was potentially the last act of my life. The effect of addiction is similar to the effect experienced by that journalist. Whenever the body adjusts down its internal mechanisms in response to overload, our sensitivity to stimulation shrinks along with our ability to enjoy it. When the original amount of substance or level of behavior no longer produces the same effect, we say that an addict in this bind has developed a tolerance. The same amount provides less satisfaction, so the alcoholic's drink of choice changes from beer to vodka. The pornography addict moves on to an affair. The gambler quits work altogether to spend more time trying to recover losses. But even with increased stimulation, the cycle must continue because we reap ever less enjoyment from the stimulation we do experience. Because we are now less sensitive to and aware of stimulation, we find that we suffer increasingly from dissatisfaction with life and from boredom. Then, once again, in an attempt to escape this dreariness, we raise the level of intensity and the cycle begins another turn. When we act as though the intensity or quality of stimulation is the key to enjoying life, we lock ourselves in a vicious circle and become like dogs chasing our tails. Instead of more enjoyment, our tactic leads to less. Yesterday's titillating pinup poster becomes today's magazine ad, and today's thrilling blockbuster becomes tomorrow's yawner. Whenever an activity is pursued for the sheer thrill of it, it seems that in that very indulgence we lose some of our capacity to be thrilled, and even our capacity to enjoy generally. We become ever more calloused and hard to please. In her book, A Return to Modesty, Wendy Shallet describes a particularly fascinating illustration of the intensity trap and its long-term effect. She compared photographs of men and women in public beaches at the turn of the 20th century with photographs from modern nude beaches. The playful glances exchanged by the women and men in the old photographs convey a sense of attraction and excitement, while the nudists appeared bored and distracted. Looking back, one can imagine how the logic of escalation operated. If an exposed ankle was intriguing, suits that showed the calf must have provided twice the thrill. The excitement that came with each new step did not last, however, and we've had to progress all the way to see-through fabrics and thong bikinis. Shallet's prescription? Return to modesty, and soon less will become more again. The hungry ghost is the personification Tibetan Buddhists give to our cravings. The insatiable nature of these cravings is symbolized by a creature with a gigantic belly and a very tiny throat. As a result, it can always be consuming and still remain voraciously hungry. The more the ghost eats, the larger grows its belly and the smaller its throat. This is how our abundance has turned to scarcity, how our overflowing lives leave us feeling empty. Unfortunately, most of us are well on our way down this deadening path. The breadth and depth of our desensitization are astounding. Both as individuals and as a society, we've subjected ourselves to an improper and artificially intense level of stimulation that has deadened our senses and our sensibilities. We are left demanding more stimulation than ever in order to achieve enjoyment. This cycle of addiction is a vicious circle, a trap into which we once set foot voluntarily and now find ourselves stuck. Fortunately, the intensity trap still allows us some wiggle room, and we can liberate ourselves if we are willing to put in the effort. The first step for us is to recognize the ways in which we have been chasing desire and thereby raising our appetite one notch at a time to new levels. Are you still believing appetite's propaganda in some areas of your life? Do you believe that more intensity is what you need in your work, in your love life, in the activities you pursue during your leisure time, and in your entertainment choices? We can begin to emerge from our bondage by refusing to continue to escalate the intensity of these pursuits. Then we will gradually recover from our current state of too much and be better prepared to enjoy hunger's hidden treasures. That concludes our reading today from Dr. Mark Chamberlain's book, Wanting More: The Challenge of Enjoyment in the Age of Addiction. Please join with me in the third step prayer. This can be found on page 63 of Alcoholics Anonymous, on page 95 of the S.A. White Book, or by Googling third step prayer. Please join me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Please email me with questions, with commentary, with feedback at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. I do accept contributions to cover expenses of this free podcast. You can donate via PayPal through the link on the show notes page. And remember that the Recovery Support podcast does not promote any program or fellowship and only informs about resources that I found helpful to my clients. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com. Have a terrific week and have a sober day.